Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. With the topic of prasadam. Last night we finished with a few things about Prabhupada's eating, how he liked banana leaves on his plates, and now another thing, ISKCON's birthday cake. Yeah. Of course, Prabhupada was not a big fan of Western fare. I don't recall him ever eating pasta. That's a big Western favorite. Pizza, all these different things. Prabhupada, of course, was brought up on Bengali prasadam, and that was what he liked. But there were sometimes occasional things that he took. Ice cream was one of them. He mentioned that the other night. Pragosh Prabhu and one other devotee had a personal darshan, and Prabhupada offered them some nice ice cream that had been made by the devotees in New Vrindavan and shipped over to him. And Prabhupada had a little bit himself also, and he liked it. Of course, cold stuff was not good for him, so he didn't have much, but he did like it. So another thing that he liked sometimes was cake. So July the 6th, 1976, Prabhupada was in Washington, D.C. We had just observed with the American public the bicentennial of American independence, it was in fact 2 days later on the 6th, the 10th anniversary of ISKCON, of the formation of ISKCON. So we had a special program the temple room. Prabhupada gave a nice lecture. He explained that actually this Krishna consciousness movement is 5,000 years old. It's not that, you know, just 10 years ago it sprang into being. And in fact, even beyond the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, with Lord Krishna's appearance 5,000 years ago, speaking the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, that is the foundation of the Krishna consciousness movement. So there was a nice lecture. Rupanuga Prabhu, he got up and he read through the 7 original aims and objectives that Prabhupada had outlined for his ISKCON society in July of 1966. And then he mentioned a little bit how Prabhupada had actually fulfilled each one of those 7 objectives. Also another special feature was that the devotees cooked a very big cake, birthday cake for ISKCON. They had been inspired by a report in the newspapers that a giant 1-ton cake had been cooked for the bicentennial. Of course, after they cooked it, they had taken it down to the mall for distribution to the public, and then the health authorities came in and forbade it because the cake had gone off. So that was America's birthday cake. It had gone off, maybe, you know, symbolic of the rest of America. But anyway, they had to dump it. They couldn't distribute it. Not so with our ISKCON birthday cake. The devotees stayed up all night the previous night. They made a big cake about 9 inches deep and about a meter around. And it was all decorated. It contained all bits of fruit and mangoes, and like it was a sponge cake mixed with that, and nice icing on the top. And when they brought it before Srila Prabhupada on his Vyasasan, then they gave him a silver knife to cut the cake with. So they had made some decoration around the surface of the cake, cows, yeah, going all the way around. So Prabhupada was very careful when he cut the cake not to cut through one of the, you know, the cow motifs. He cut around it, I saw. he cut out a chunk, but he didn't take any in the temple room. So then after the program was over, Prabhupada retired to his rooms, and some of the senior devotees came in just for a nice darshan. So Pushta Krishna Maharaj led the devotees in an especially buoyant kirtan, and Prabhupada returned back to his rooms. He invited many of the senior men to join him, and as they sat eager and respectful around his low marble table, Palika brought in some large pieces of the cake. Making sure that everybody had some, Prabhupada happily consumed a good-sized portion himself, and he declared with a smile, very nice. Ananda mayo byasat. This is the movement of Ananda. Pleasure only. Krishna is Anandamaya. And if you remain with Krishna, you'll become Anandamaya. A rich man, he's enjoying. And if you remain in the association with the rich man, then you'll also enjoy. So where is the difficulty? A very rich man and his associates, they are also rich men. Is it not? And if you remain with poor men, then you are also poor. Rupanuga said, you've explained that the servant of the house of the king is almost as good as the king. Prabhupada grinned. No, he is better than the king. The king, he eats whatever is offered to him, but they can eat whatever they like. Is it not? Who is restricting them? So, sometimes the servants are better off than the master. I had a question about the ceremony in the temple. Srila Prabhupada's slight hesitancy before slicing into the cake brought it to mind. Is that cutting of the cake, did they used to do that in Vedic times, or is that a Western invention? We were just wondering about that. Prabhupada thought for a second and then replied, prasadam distribution. Either you cut it or you take it with your hand. It's the same thing. It doesn't make any difference. So, as we feasted on the delicious cake, Prabhupada educated us on another practical aspect of Vedic culture. He inquired who had made the cake, and he was told that Lalita Sakhi Dasi had done it. He was pleased, and he said that this was the Vedic system, that the women become very expert in cooking and household affairs. He said their duty was to learn how to please the husband and look after the children. Even if husband and wife did not always agree, there was no question of divorce. You must accept whatever God has given you as husband or wife. You must. There is no thinking even this idea of divorce. One may not agree with the husband, that is natural. And sometimes we do not agree. But there is no question of divorce. Because I was just listening to a lecture Prabhupada gave in 1973, where he was making the same point. But he said nowadays, of course, even in India, the divorce law has come in. And in all big cities in India now, it's rife with divorce. So the whole social system is breaking down. But the Vedic system was that you learn to tolerate, that's all. Yeah, not everything is perfect and you'll never get a perfect match. But if you can somehow or another agree to live together and husband follows his duties, wife follows her duties, then there's mutual support and the family can actually grow up in a stable fashion, the children. That was cake. Now, something about the remnants, Prabhupada's Maha Maha Prasadam. Yeah, the remnants from the deity plates, that's called Maha Prasadam, and the remnants from the Guru's plate, that is called Maha Maha Prasadam. So we were under a general instruction when we were traveling with Srila Prabhupada that whatever prasadam was left over on his plates or in the pots, that had to be mixed up. And then that should be distributed to all the devotees in the temple where we were staying. Prabhupada didn't like the idea that his servants would, you know, have a monopoly on his prasadam. But we obviously got some every day anyway, but we had to also distribute it. So there was one incident that occurred in Mayapur between Prabhupada's secretary and his cook, an argument over this business of who could take Prabhupada's Maha Prasadam. So this was on January the 28th, 1976. Prabhupada was in Mayapur. Tamal Krishna Goswami, he had come at the very beginning of the month to be Prabhupada's secretary for that 1 month. And everybody knew Tamal was a very particular eater. He was very, very particular about the standard of prasadam. So when we got to Mayapur, the general devotees, the prasadam was this very coarse, I don't know whether they call it red rice, but there's some very coarse kind of rice, which the Bengalis like, and they eat huge mounds of it. If you go into any restaurant, you'll see that they make a big, big mound of rice, and then little bits of sabji around, and that's everybody enjoys like that. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he just felt that that kind of rougher kind of rice was not good for his digestion. So he had asked Srila Prabhupada for permission to eat from the pots that were being used, you know, for Prabhupada's prasadam, because Prabhupada always was given basmati rice. So Prabhupada readily agreed. Anyway, somehow or another, that didn't translate very well down to Hari Kesh, who was doing the cooking. So this particular afternoon, after lunch, Prabhupada was sitting at the end of the veranda enjoying the view of the Ganga. So after eating, he would like to go and sit in a chair and just look out over the Ganges on that western side there. And we would come and sit with him. So this particular day, I was sitting on the floor, Prabhupada was on his chair, and suddenly loud shouts and the slam of a door broke the tranquility. Prabhupada sent me to investigate. I found Tamal Krishna Maharaj sitting in his room before a plate of prasadam, clearly upset. He had just had an argument with Hari Kesh over who should get the remnants of Srila Prabhupada's prasadam. As I stood, Hari Kesh came back in the room and again began berating him. So they were really having a yelling match. Several days ago, Tamal Krishna had asked Srila Prabhupada if he could eat the extra that was cooked for him, because he found the kind of rice that the devotees eat in Mayapur to be too coarse for his digestion. And Prabhupada had approved. However, Hari Kesh had previously received instructions from Srila Prabhupada when we were in Vrindavan that all of his remnants could not be monopolized by his immediate servants, but should be distributed to all the other devotees. As the cook, Hari Kesh resented Tamal Krishna's acquisition of all the leftovers, while Tamal Krishna argued that he was only taking what was left in the pots and not what was left on Prabhupada's plate. Thus the dispute. Tamal Krishna also complained that he should not have been interrupted whilst he was honoring prasadam. So Prabhupada called them both onto the veranda. After hearing their arguments, he managed to resolve the issue to everybody's satisfaction. Prabhupada said that Hari Kesh should not have interrupted Tamal Krishna whilst he was eating. Respecting prasadam is a very important function and there should be no disturbance. He said that otherwise one's appetite is lost and indigestion is the result. He gave his permission for Tamal Krishna to eat what was left in the pots, but he also confirmed his desire that his prasadam be distributed to the devotees. He told us there's absolutely no difference between what is on the plate and what is in the pot. Whether cooked for Guru or Krishna, it is all prasadam, and all just as spiritually potent. When I mentioned that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita there was a distinction made between Maha Prasadam, the remnants of the deity offering, and Maha Maha Prasadam, which is the spiritual master's remnants, Prabhupada said that that distinction was made for reference only. It is all prasadam. So, a technical. Sometimes Prabhupada would, you know, point out that some of the rules and regulations governing our spiritual practices are technicalities. In other words, that means that under some circumstances they can actually be ignored for the sake of a higher principle. And, you know, of course that depends on the Krishna consciousness of the individual involved. You can't, you know, run around saying everything is a technicality when you don't want to do it. But under some circumstances it may be done. But that requires a lot of knowledge. One example I'll give just off the point, but it's an example of another technicality that Prabhupada explained. When we were in Vrindavan, we had the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which had just come out a few months before, and I read in there that it says that no one should receive worship directly in front of the deity. I see sometimes our devotees, they don't know that. A sannyasi comes into the temple room, or their guru comes into the temple room, they get down and bow and offer their obeisances to the devotee in front of the deities. Technically that should not be done. Yeah, only the deities should receive obeisances. So every day we would have Guru Puja to Srila Prabhupada in front of the deities in the temple. So when I read this regulation in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it made me think, well, you know, we offer Prabhupada our full-length dandabhats in front of the deities every day. So how does that fit? So I went in one day and I asked Srila Prabhupada, you know, I pointed out this regulation and I asked him that we do this every day, so is that correct or not? Prabhupada looked at me and he said very simply, it is a technicality. And that was all he said. So it's a technicality. Yeah, the principle of worship of the Guru, of course, is paramount. And in, you know, our worship of Srila Prabhupada, that was the, I would say, the most singular, most important teaching that we receive. Is that the Guru has to be worshipped, Shakshad Dari, as good as God, on the same level. That's very important, that principle of Guru Parampara, and worshipping the spiritual master, and following his instructions. And of course, the other thing is that, at least in Vrindavan, when we offered our obeisances to Prabhupada, he was on the Vyasasan, and you know, we would lie down with our left side to him. That means our heads were pointing towards Gaunitai's altar. And Prabhupada is on the altar, you know, Guru Garanga. So he's both on the altar and he was on the Vyasasan. So technically speaking, it was correct to offer our obeisances to him because he was in both places at once. Maybe not in other temples. Anyway, just a point about technicality. So, Maha Maha Prasadam and Maha Prasadam and Prasadam are all the same. They're all spiritually, you know, as effective and purifying. Okay, so Prabhupada's remnants, other kinds of distribution to sometimes guests and visitors, and even people, you know, that were not guests and visitors. One example of that was when we arrived in Sydney en route to Melbourne in 1976. We left Bombay on the morning of the 18th of April. We went via Singapore. We had an overnight flight, and we came into Sydney at 10 a.m. in the morning, about 3 hours late. There'd been a delay in Singapore, and what was supposed to be a 4-hour stopover turned out to be a 7-hour stopover. So anyway, we landed in Sydney at 10 a.m., 3 hours late. Again, that was supposed to be a transit. Jai Damodas, the president of the Sydney Temple, was waiting in the transit lounge to join our flight to Melbourne. Together with a new devotee who works for the airlines, he offered Srila Prabhupada a flower garland and a large silver platter of sweets and cut fruits. Srila Prabhupada took a few bites of the prasadam, and then we distributed the rest to all the other waiting passengers. So as soon as Prabhupada had finished them, we went around with the big plate and we started handing out all the fruit to all the airline passengers. Most were happy to accept, and within a few minutes the plate was empty. We left at 11 a.m. and we arrived in Melbourne just after noon. Long flight we'd been travelling. By the time we got to Melbourne, we'd been travelling for over 22 hours. So it was very difficult for Srila Prabhupada, but he tolerated it for the preaching. Okay, so other people's remnants. I mentioned this the other day, so I'm not going to go over this. The Sunday feast leftovers. So I've already mentioned that. I have it written down here. I'll just skip that one. We've already discussed that. Another kind of prasadam remnant. August the 13th, 1976, Prabhupada had just arrived in Bombay from his four-month tour overseas. Once sitting inside his room, Prabhupada accepted Guru Puja, allowing the leaders to bathe his feet. They then happily sprinkled the Charanamrita on everybody's heads and passed the transcendental nectar around to be drunk by the eager devotees. Sitting back on his asana to relax after his journey, Prabhupada addressed his adoring audience. Jai, take prasadam and chant Hare Krishna, that's all. So we have now nice buildings. Live there peacefully, chant Hare Krishna, Vas. This is my success. If I see that you are living very nicely, chanting very nicely, then all my labor is successful. So Prabhupada was very easy to please in one sense. Yeah, if he just saw people were coming and chanting, taking prasadam and were happy, then that was the success of his mission. Of course, he was very difficult to please in terms of executing it. Prabhupada always had more and more, bigger and bigger schemes for spreading Krishna consciousness, and he would push his disciples to the very limit of their capacities and beyond in order to get things set up. A plate of prasadam was offered to him, and after taking a small sweet, he had the rest distributed to the crowd. So that was the Charanamrita was the key there. Prabhupada distributing prasadam at Guru Puja, that was another daily feature, very nice event. Every time that Prabhupada received Guru Puja, or in most temples at least, then they would all come forward, they would give Prabhupada a very large plate filled with cookies or some other prasadam, and then as the kirtan was going on, everybody would come up and Prabhupada would pass out the cookies or the prasadam. So January 24th, 1976 in Mayapur, every morning at Guru Puja, Prabhupada is personally giving out sweets to all the children. He sits on the Vyasasana as each child comes forward to receive his prasadam. There's a small two-year-old boy from Australia called Damodar, who persistently remains right in front of the Vyasasana each morning with his pudgy hand held out. Prabhupada gives him half a sweet, which Damodar pushes into his mouth. Then he moves his hand over the back of his head, wipes his open palm on his seeker, and then again holds it out. So it was like, you know, back again. And Prabhupada was giving him half a sweet. So again, Prabhupada gives him another piece of sweet, and again, Damodar repeats the same ritual. There are no words exchanged, simply the boy's chubby palm goes out for the sweet, up to his mouth, over his head, and then back again for more. This exchange with Damodar has gone on for several mornings now, and Prabhupada laughs to see him wipe his hands in such a fashion. Who has taught him this? He asked. So he'd seen the devotees, you know, when their hands get wet, they wipe it on their seekers. So he saw that. He thought that was the system. So, yeah. I'm not sure, but I was told by Korma that Damodar actually came to the reunion last week. I meant to look him up in Sydney last weekend. He got in touch with him somewhere or another on Facebook, although he hadn't been connected with the devotees for about 30 years, but somehow or another he tracked him down. So similarly, you know, that was a standard procedure, and especially in America, they like cookies. So they would come to Los Angeles, there were, you know, like 100 kids practically, and they would bring this huge tray, you know, with a great mound of cookies on it. And the kirtan would be going on for 10 or 15 minutes while Prabhupada handed out, you know, all the children would come up and get one. So it was very nice. Okay, so other prasadam, taking on planes and in cars. Yeah, we were very often traveling. And Prabhupada was meticulous about having his prasadam at the same time every day as much as possible, even if he was on an aeroplane or in a car. So on April the 18th, 1976, we were just setting off to go to Australia. So we left early in the morning. We left for the airport at 7 o'clock in the morning. And by the time we got up into the air, it was time for Prabhupada's breakfast. As soon as we were airborne, Prabhupada had his breakfast. I set out each of the four circular stainless steel containers and filled them with whatever Prabhupada indicated from his well-packed tiffin box. From the multi-tiered container, he ate sabji, rice, puri, some fried savouries, butter and samosa, as well as some fruits and sandesh. I served him very carefully, much to the interest of the other passengers, because again, Prabhupada was traveling first class, because I was his servant, and I was there with him. And then Pushta Krishna was in the back there in the economy. So I was serving Prabhupada out, and I saw all the other, you know, all the other passengers. They were very interested to see what was going on. As he does, wherever and whenever he travels, Prabhupada maintained his regular eating schedule. Knowing this, I was well equipped for the journey, and I am by now well versed in all the items that Prabhupada requires when traveling. On planes, he never accepts anything provided by the airlines because they handle meat. He doesn't even use the utensils like knives, forks and spoons, because generally the metal ones have already been used. He will accept new plastic ones though. He won't eat anything touched by the karmis. He will not even accept the salt that they provide. So in addition to the prasadam, I carried small packets of pepper, salt and ginger. Generally he eats alone, but of course on the plane that was not possible. Unperturbed by his surroundings and the curiosity of the passengers, he simply continued following his daily schedule. He ate very slowly and carefully. By watching him take prasadam, it was easy to understand that the Lord's mercy, prasadam, is to be rendered service by the devotee. Prasadam should be eaten as humbly as one performs other forms of devotional service. Completely freed from lust and other mundane attributes, his divine grace's devotion is apparent even in the most basic activity of eating. When he finished his meal, Prabhupada told me to call for Pushta Krishna Maharaj, and then together we shared whatever was left over. I always feel a little uncomfortable in eating in Prabhupada's presence, thinking that it may offend him, but he always insists that his servants take prasadam whenever he does, and he is concerned to see that we are taken care of. Some of the passengers saw us eating the remnants of Srila Prabhupada's half-chewed puris, and I think they were a little shocked, because that was the thing that we went for first, you know. Something that had been in Prabhupada's mouth and, you know, there was a portion left over. We wanted that one first. But of course, in Prabhupada's association, we were unaffected by their mundane opinions. At the end of his meal, Prabhupada very carefully cleansed his mouth with a toothpick, then poured a little water onto his hand to cleanse it before drinking from the cup. He first swilled his mouth out, and then he drank, and thereafter he completed his ablutions in the bathroom. By the time he returned, I had cleared everything away. So that was something that when Tamal Krishna Maharaj came on the party in January of 76, we had immediately flown down to Madras. And then on the flight down, Prabhupada had taken his breakfast. And he was watching very carefully what Prabhupada was doing. And then he pointed out, he said, just see how expert Srila Prabhupada is. Because he was watching. At the end of his eating, he took the glass of water. And normally, you know, you would just drink. But then Prabhupada immediately, the first thing he did was wash his hands over the tray. Then he drank, because if he'd have drunk, then the water would have been contaminated and then he wouldn't have been able to wash his hands with it. So just small things like that. But, you know, that's Prabhupada's, you know, expertise. All the little things that you see there. So the same thing there. Similarly, when we left Melbourne, we flew to New Zealand. The same thing happened. We had Prabhupada's remnants. I saw some of the passengers looking at us as we were sharing them around. And again, when we left Hawaii, I served Srila Prabhupada on the aeroplane. And there was one gentleman that was sitting next to us who I got talking to afterwards. He was observing very carefully everything. And it turned out he had been a Christian lay preacher. But then he had had some crisis in his faith and he had basically given it up. So I started preaching to him that he shouldn't give up his faith. You know, God actually exists and the purpose of life is to serve him. And Prabhupada was sitting there, you know, listening very carefully to what I was saying. I was a bit reluctant to, you know, to preach in front of Srila Prabhupada. Normally that would be, you know, he got the deference for that. But he was happy to hear me speak just to see if I knew the philosophy. And at the end of it, the man, he then looked to Srila Prabhupada and he said, he's very good. He liked what I'd said and he was encouraged. And Prabhupada said, yes, he's preaching very nicely. Anyway, so he had seen me taking Prabhupada's remnants. He was very curious about that and he actually asked me about it also. So I began explaining the value of prasadam to him. Okay, some other prasadam that Prabhupada used to receive that was sent to him was Jagannath prasadam. He had an old friend, Dr. Shyama Sunda, who lived in Jagannath Puri. So November the 15th, 1976, Prabhupada had received a letter from his old friend and he had put in the envelope some grains of Jagannath Mahaprasadam because they were all dry, but Prabhupada immediately took them. So he said, I thank you very much for your kindly remembering me. Sometimes I wish to take Jagannath Prasad because nowadays I have no appetite here. I went to Jagannath Puri in 1958 during some special function. I was taking Jagannath Prasad very sumptuously. I am now praying to Lord Jagannath to take me there again at his will and honor the remnants of his food. So that was an interesting letter. That was November 1976. And in fact, Prabhupada had told us previously that he would not go back to Jagannath Puri until they allowed his disciples to enter the temple. So, you know, it seemed like this was a nice sentiment that I'm praying to Lord Jagannath to take me there again at his will. He hadn't been there since 58, so nearly 20 years had passed. But then in January of 1977, we had gone down to Bhubaneswar. Prabhupada was going to, you know, do the inauguration of the temple project there. And when we got there, somehow or another, the land at that time seemed to be like a desert. It was very desolate. In the area where, you know, our temple was to be built, it was right on the fringe of Bhubaneswar. There was no other buildings around. And it really didn't seem to be such a very good place, you know, to have a temple. Prabhupada liked it, and Gaur Govinda Maharaj, but the rest of us were having doubts. And Gagamuni came and he said, Srila Prabhupada, you know, why are we here? We could be in Puri. And, you know, Jagannath Puri is the main place. So he said, I could go there. I know there are some life members of ours there. And we could look for some land there. Maybe we could do something in Jagannath Puri. So just to keep us happy, Prabhupada allowed him to go there. So then when he came back, he said, there's three or four plots of land. In fact, the government had offered us some land at one point, but that land was not very good. It was just sand. So on Gagamuni, and I think Bhavananda was there, and others, everybody was kind of fired up to go to Jagannath Puri. So at the prospect of constructing our own temple, then Prabhupada agreed that he would go. So we went on the 25th of January, and Gagamuni booked Srila Prabhupada into a room at the tourist bungalow number one, which was right on the seashore, and we spent the day there, and then we were supposed to return in the evening. Then something else happened. Prabhupada had a visitor. One of the pujaris from the Jagannath temple, Sadashiva Rat, and he invited Prabhupada to come to a function that he was having the next day. And so we ended up spending overnight. So all told, we spent 2 days and one night in Jagannath Puri. And of course, whilst we were there, the devotees went out and bought Jagannath Prasadam and brought that for Srila Prabhupada. So, as Prabhupada said there, in 2 months before, I'm praying to Lord Jagannath to take me there again at his will and honor the remnants of his food. And it happened. So, okay, so Prabhupada liked to purchase boga. So that's prasadam, because, you know, the ingredients for making prasadam have to be purchased. And Prabhupada had a particular method. There were a couple of incidents that happened where Prabhupada bought the boga. So April the 5th, 1976, we were in Vrindavan. So for his morning walk, Prabhupada went to look at some vacant land in Ramanreti that he wants to purchase. That's actually, if some of you have been to Vrindavan, there's a parikrama path just be at the side and at the back of our temple, and there's an area called the Krishna, where the Krishna Balaram tree is. Yeah, and devotees like to go there. It's kind of open, and they like to chant their japa. Now I think that that area has become built up also. But in those days it was completely open. So Prabhupada saw that land, and he suggested that our householders could build their own houses there and colonize it like our Los Angeles community. So Prabhupada saw that open land. He had no sentiments about open land. And he said, buy the land and then let the householders build their own houses there, and it'll be like Los Angeles. Yeah. Okay, so our hospice is built there, and Padmanabha Goswami's got some land there, I think, as well. Yeah, guest house. Yeah. Oh, it was his land. Some.
His family, Padmanabha Goswami's family, there was some important land for them.
Okay, yeah, so yeah, that, you know, all the land in Vrindavan now is very valuable, but there's a nice hospice that's been built there, so that's good. Anyway, Prabhupada was interested, and he suggested, because there was nowhere at that time for our householders to live, so all the ladies were living on the fourth floor of the guest house. The kids were running around causing a disturbance all day, and eventually Prabhupada had them all move out to what was then called the Fogal Ashram, which is now our Goshala. So some land had been given with a house there, and later on that was expanded. So as we walked about, a local farmer passed. carrying a large basket of green beans on his head. Srila Prabhupada spotted him, and immediately he began to bargain with him. After a lengthy exchange, he purchased the whole basket. The man left happily, having done his whole day's business within a few minutes. Gurudas Maharaj complimented Srila Prabhupada on getting a good bargain. Prabhupada laughed, telling us that it was something that he had learned in his childhood. My father used to do that. He'd go to a vegetable vendor, so he has a big basket, and he'll say, "What do you want for all, the whole basket?" So he's ready, because he'll sit down so long in the market, so at a very cheap rate, then he'll sell it. And it was not required in the family, actually. My mother became very angry. Oh, you'll bring so much vegetables, it will all be spoiled. But he would purchase like that. If you gave him in those days 50 rupees to go to the market, he'll spend all the money and bring it all back to the home. So that was the first time I saw Prabhupada buying some boga like that. Then the next time, we were in Hyderabad at the farm. This was in December the 7th. This was quite an amusing incident. So we got out, Prabhupada was walking around the land and inspecting everything. And on the way back from the walk, we saw a farmer walking some 300 meters distant across the fields with a basket of eggplants on his head, destined for the local markets. Prabhupada had us call him over, and after looking at the produce, he began to bargain. Prabhupada spoke in Hindi, the farmer spoke in Telugu, and Ram Shraddha translated. The man asked for 15 rupees for the whole basket, and he estimated that he had 10 kilos of eggplants. Mahamsa thought that it was a little high, so Prabhupada offered him 5. The man came down to 10 rupees, but Prabhupada wouldn't budge from 5. After a discussion, the man declined. "I will better go there and sell it," he said. And so he set off for the fields again. So then we continued walking along the dirt road. There was an interesting little snippet of conversation. Murti Das, his son Jagadananda, had a question for Srila Prabhupada. He was a young boy, about 12 at that time. He asked Srila Prabhupada, "Is the sun god an incarnation of Krishna?" Prabhupada smiled, appreciating the young man's inquiry. "Everyone is an incarnation," he told him. "You are also. Mamaivamso Jiva Bhuta. You have not read the Bhagavad Gita? Any living entity is a part and parcel of Krishna." So turning to us, he said, "Just like this child is part and parcel of his father." And then back to the boy, "You are part and parcel of your father. So similarly, every one of us, we are part and parcel of Krishna." Not quite getting the point, Jagadananda asked again, "Is the sun god an avatar?" Prabhupada told him with some emphasis, "Any god or dog, anyone is part of God, a part and parcel." And then he walked on. So, depending how you look at it, everybody's an incarnation of Krishna. Don't take that too literally, though. So, because in India they do that. Another incarnation just died last month. Yeah, grew old. Yeah. Anyway. So, a good 2 minutes after the farmer had left us, Prabhupada had second thoughts. He asked Mahamsa what was the market price of the produce, and Mahamsa told him about 1 rupee a kilo. So the man was actually asking the regular price. And on top of this, Hansaduta pointed out that we would have to spend 5 rupees on petrol just to go to the market and back. So he estimated he had 10 kilos of produce, and he was asking for 10 rupees, which was the market price. So then Prabhupada had us call him back. The fellow was a good distance away by this time, but responding to the calls of the devotees, he made his way slowly back. He must have expected that Srila Prabhupada was going to pay his price, but as we waited for him to arrive, I suggested that we offer him 7 or 8 rupees. Because I figured if he's coming all the way back, he's not going to refuse now. You know, he's back and forth. So when he finally returned, Prabhupada offered him 6. There was a short discussion between the devotees and the man, and then they told Srila Prabhupada, he wants 13. So everybody left. We thought that after taking so much trouble to walk over the second time, that he would accept Prabhupada's offer. So then again he turned to go, and so then Prabhupada offered him 7. Still he continued on his way. As he walked some distance, one of the devotees reminded Srila Prabhupada that the farmer had initially said 10 rupees. So again, a third time, Prabhupada had us call him back. As he trudged back over the rough sods of the ploughed field, Mahamsa, amidst our laughter, said that now we should offer him 9. Prabhupada also laughed, but finally he bought the whole load, the basket and all, not just the produce, but and the basket, for 10 rupees. The farmer went off happily, having saved himself a trip to the markets, and then later on we were happy because it turned out that there was actually 14 kilos. So he had underestimated what he had got, so we all won on that one. Anyway, it's a funny incident coming back and forth. Okay, so we've heard about cooking for Prabhupada. Prabhupada himself, of course, was an expert cook. So a few things about that. I've already mentioned that he showed us how to use his cooker when he was in Bombay. Another incident, quite amusing, was in Vrindavan. This was November the 12th, 1976. So Prabhupada had his back garden, and at the end of the garden there was a small kitchen. And Prabhupada himself had never been in that kitchen. His servants were using it. So I used to give Prabhupada his massage in the back garden. And he would see the cooks coming in and out, going back and forth across the pathway. So Palika and Shruti Rupa have returned from a successful cooking excursion to Calcutta. So I mentioned that Jamuna had flown in and got Prabhupada's blessings for this cookbook project. And she was going to Calcutta. So because she was going, Palika and Shruti Rupa also decided that they would also go. They left Arundhati to cook for Prabhupada in Vrindavan. So Jamuna has now gone back to America. Prabhupada was pleased to see them, because as was Arundhati. She has been having some difficulty in preparing a Punjabi butter sabji, a vegetable stew with spicy dried dal cakes simmered in a seasoned stock. Somehow she hasn't been getting it quite right to Prabhupada's liking. So it's become such a frustration for her that Prabhupada decided to go in the kitchen and show her himself. So today, right after his massage, still wearing his gamsha, the oil still glistening on his golden skin, Prabhupada went to the far corner of the back garden and entered the kitchen. His presence filled the small kitchen with the fragrance of sandalwood and mustard. The ladies had already been at work preparing freshly ground spices. Because of his delicate digestion and the high likelihood that any powdered spice is either old or adulterated, Prabhupada has his cooks grind various spices fresh every morning. So they would spend sometimes 2 hours just preparing the spicing, you know, soaking it and grinding it and mixing it, etc. He often instructs them on which spices and combinations that he wants. Just cumin, or cumin and black pepper, turmeric, fresh ginger, hot chili paste, etc. It often takes an hour or more to prepare them, and some, like turmeric root, must be softened for 5 days before grinding. With the spices already prepared, the ladies were cutting up the vegetables when Prabhupada entered. Accompanied by Bhagatji, He's the gentleman that lived around the corner that used to make Prabhupada's breads, as he called them. Prabhupada stopped briefly at the entrance, quickly surveying the interior before stepping in. It's a tiny place, about 8 feet wide, 14 feet long, tapering to a point, and 6.5 feet high. So, you know, I think it was an afterthought, actually. It was just some extra space, so they made it into Prabhupada's private kitchen. Prabhupada was in good humor, and he smiled with satisfaction as he stepped inside. "Oh, I've never been in my kitchen before. It is very nice." Relaxed and unhurried, he looked around the benches, at the burners and the pots and pans, and then unexpectedly, he dipped into a small bucket of vegetable scraps, which were next to where Shruti Rupa was sitting with a knife. Fishing out a large cauliflower core, which had just been denuded of its florets, he asked, "Why are you throwing this?" She flushed in embarrassed silence, and Prabhupada shook his head slightly, but didn't say anything more. His inquiry was enough to tell them not to waste anything. In the West, we do that. You know, you get the stalks, you cut off the flowery bits, and then you throw the stalk out. But in India, they cook everything, and Prabhupada was, you know, particularly, he saw it lying in the bin. "Why are you throwing this away?" He chatted amiably with Bhagatji as he sat down on a low stool in front of two gas burners. With the ladies standing at the side, ingredients at the ready, he heated ghee in a heavy bottom brass pot over a high heat. In quick sequence, he briefly fried a few paste masalas and then added potatoes and cauliflower. He added water and bodies and simmered the stew until the vegetables were tender. As he cooked, he was laughing and chuckling with Bhagatji in Hindi. Palika stirred the pot, turned down the flame, and continued to stir. Prabhupada looked at it and turned the flame back up. Turning to Bhagatji, he said, "See, so simple, and still they cannot do." After 20 minutes, it was done, and then he got up to leave and take his bath. Bhagatji, who generally comes every morning to ask Srila Prabhupada what he wants for his lunch, and always makes his chapatis, was impressed. As they made their way along the small brick path to the house, Prabhupada laughed and he told him, "Oh, I can cook for 100 men in less than 1 hour." Bhagatji laughed and he shook his head. "No, Prabhupada, that's not possible." Prabhupada laughed louder and he declared, "I bet you 1 lakh of rupees I can do it." At this, Bhagatji cracked up with laughter. "No, I'm not going to take your bet. You'll win both ways. If you do it, you get 1 lakh. And if you don't succeed, you'll tell me to donate it." Prabhupada shook with amusement. He loved the joke, and he admitted it was true. So, some other cooking by Prabhupada. January the 6th, 1977. We were in Bombay. And Prabhupada, as I mentioned, during that period, he was becoming very weak. He was becoming very sick. He was having a lot of problems with his digestion. These two different doctors had come, the Ayurvedic doctors. They, you know, prescribed just boiled rice and a little dalia. And Prabhupada refused to eat just boiled things, as he said it was the same as starving. So it was a bit of a frustration. And so on the 6th of January, Prabhupada cooked for himself today, and by doing so he got some appetite. He said that if one eats one's own cooking, it is palatable even if it is not so well done. Palatable means that therefore it will be digested. So whatever you cook for yourself, you're going to eat. And whether it's good or bad, it doesn't make any difference. You've done it, and so, you know, you'll digest it. If somebody else does it, maybe not. His cooking is very simple. He gets the vegetables and dal and rice, loads them into the cooker, and puts it on a low flame at the end of his massage. And then by the time he is bathed and dressed and chanted his Gayatri mantra, it is ready. Then he makes a simple chaunt, a couple of chapatis, and he eats. Actually, his cooking is just like nectar, and he makes enough for his servants to take some afterwards. So he deliberately made more than what he needed so that we could eat afterwards. So that was another occasion when we got to eat Prabhupada's cooking. So more remnants, honoring the remnants offered to his spiritual master. Because Prabhupada, I mentioned when we were in Hyderabad in December of 76, there was the disappearance day of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. The devotees made a very nice feast, and Prabhupada tried a portion of everything just to make sure that they were doing it nicely. He was satisfied. So this was the year before, on December 22nd in 1975. Prabhupada was in Bombay. So there was a special program in the evening for Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's disappearance festival. And after Prabhupada's lecture, we all stood around the Vyasa stand before the picture of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. We responsively recited the pranam mantras, following the lead of Lokanath Swami and offering flowers. Lokanath Maharaj at that time had been a sannyasi for about 2 weeks. He had just taken sannyas early in December in Vrindavan. So afterwards we had a lively kirtan and Guru Puja before Prabhupada returned upstairs. With great satisfaction, he took some Maha Prasadam that had been offered this evening to his Guru Maharaj. He also had Harikesh make some extra kachuris. To see him eat heartily is a good sign that his health is improving. So, 1976, February, then, because that was the disappearance festival, and then there was the appearance day, which was in February. So February the 20th, 1976, we were in Mayapur, and there was a special program. So after Prabhupada's speech, because we were fasting, so then Prabhupada came down in the temple room about 10 o'clock, and he gave a special talk on his spiritual master and preaching. Then after his speech, we gathered in front of the Vyasasan and performed the Pushpanjali and Puja, an offering of flowers. Prabhupada had Achyutananda Swami chant the four pranam prayers to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And then following Prabhupada's lead, we offered a flower to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's picture on the Vyasasan. So Prabhupada had his Guru Maharaj's picture put on the Vyasasan and his own picture was taken off. So this procedure was repeated 3 times. Prabhupada then called for Banu Das, a Japanese-Canadian brahmachari from the Namhata party, to offer the arati. The special feast cooked in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's honour was brought in and then set out on low tables directly in front of the Vyasasan. Prabhupada stood in front and he played his karatals. That was the only time I ever saw Prabhupada stand up and play karatals, because we had a set of karatals that we carried all over the world. And when Prabhupada was on the Vyasasan in the mornings, when they were having the Guru Puja, sometimes he would take his karatals out and play them during the kirtan. And of course, he was singing Jaya Radha Madhava every day, so he would play his karatals then. But this was the only time that I saw him, you know, in a stand-up kirtan, playing the karatals. So, Achyutananda Swami led an ecstatic kirtan, which had us all jumping high in the air. During the kirtan, Prabhupada called me over and asked me to gather a sample of every preparation onto his personal plate and then take it up to his room. So I ran upstairs, I got Prabhupada's plate, I brought it down, and as the kirtan was going on and the prasadam was still in front of the Vyasasan, I took a portion of everything that had been cooked and put it on Prabhupada's plate and then took it back up into his room. He wanted to check what the devotees had cooked to glorify his Guru Maharaj. He also wanted to offer his own respects by taking Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's remnants. After the program finished, Prabhupada returned upstairs and ate the feast. He was happy with all of the arrangements, but he again appeared disappointed that only about 100 guests had come. In fact, during his massage, he had criticized the management for erecting such a large building and then not inviting anyone to come, only local people, but nobody from Calcutta. Only the deity program is going on nicely, he remarked, referring to the two English identical twin brothers who were the head pujaris. Prabhupada declared, "These two brothers, Pankajangri and Janarivas, there is no comparison. Everybody should know, there is no complaint." So, you know, for Prabhupada it was a big occasion. It was his Guru Maharaj's appearance day, and yet the devotees had not made any special effort to invite, you know, big people to come from Calcutta. Just there was, you know, whoever wandered in from the local area, they were the only persons that were present, apart from our own devotees. Prabhupada did also, after complaining about that, he did also say, anyway, still, he said, one book distributed in the West is more than any festival. So that was a compensation. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't observe the festival. Yeah, but Prabhupada, you know, he was concerned. And of course, nowadays we have big festivals. But okay, so it's 10 to 9. We've been going for about an hour. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yes, sir. What is the worth of spirituality if it can be easily affected by food, the food that you consume? The point about prasadam is that it's not food. It's directly Krishna's mercy. It's non-different from Krishna. When you offer the, what we call bhoga, that means the raw food or the unoffered food, when you offer that to the deities, it's transformed and becomes directly spiritual. It's not different from Krishna himself. So in that way then, when you consume that prasadam, prasadam means mercy. Prasadam doesn't mean food actually, it means the mercy of the Lord. So when you consume that, Prabhupada said it's like an intravenous drug that you would take to cure a disease. Yeah, you have some disease, so they inject you with some medicine. You don't see how that medicine is working, but it's actually curing your whole system from the disease, and then you'll become healthy. So in the same way, simply by taking prasadam, your disease of materialism, the misconceptions that we have, that is all dissolved. It's destroyed, and then you are restored back to your full spiritual position. So, you know, Prabhupada explains that the action of chanting Hare Krishna is that it dissolves the subtle body. That means the mind, the material mind. Just like when sunshine comes, if there's a fog, then by the rays of the sun, the fog is dissipated. You don't see exactly, it's not like instantly the fog just disappears, but the influence of the sun's rays penetrates through, and then the fog evaporates, and then everything is clear. So in the same way you're chanting, or when you take prasadam, or you do any spiritual activity, that purifies the subtle, the physical and the subtle form, and it spiritualizes everything. So again, Prabhupada sometimes pointed out that every 7 or 8 years, scientifically, they calculate that every cell in the body is changed. So if you eat prasadam, and only prasadam, for 7 years, That means your whole body becomes prasadam. It becomes spiritualized. It may appear like it's a material body, but it's not. It's a spiritual body because it's being used in Krishna's service. So taking prasadam is very, very important. Now, if you don't take Krishna prasadam, what you're eating is infused with material desire. The person that's cooking, the state of their consciousness is very important. If that person is very lusty, or if he's in the mode of ignorance or passion, that subtle aspect is infused into the food that they're cooking. And if you eat that, you will also then be directly affected by it. So you have to be very careful who cooks for you. That's why in India, previously, no Brahmin would ever eat anything unless it was cooked by himself. The strict Brahmins. They only would eat their own cooking. Many of them were so strict they wouldn't even eat the cooking of their wives, or to speak about anybody else. So it's a science. And actually, just like, you know, we have a gross physical form and we have a subtle form, mind and intelligence and false ego, foodstuffs also have a gross and a subtle form. Yeah? So when you cook, you're ingesting not just the physical aspect of the food, you're ingesting the subtle aspects of it as well. And your mind becomes directly affected by what you eat. So if you don't eat prasadam, then you're eating something material. And that will affect your mind and it will affect your physical form. And it will, you know, increase your sense of bodily consciousness. If you eat just prasadam, your sense of being Krishna's devotee, being a spirit soul, not this body, that will increase. So, it's subtle and gross. Yes?
And Prabhupada also says that on the Kali in particular, we should avoid rains and beams, etc. And he said on that day, sin personified the desires of the rain. So, by eating.
Yeah. Yes, Narataki Mataji is mentioning there about eating on Ekadasis. Now, generally, actually, on Ekadasi, if you really want to be very strict, Prabhupada told me once when we were in Sanand, that actually on Ekadasi, to please Krishna, then you can fast completely, yeah, from everything, including water. But of course, you know, because we were actively preaching, then Prabhupada made another arrangement that on Ekadasi, the bare minimum observance is not to eat grains, not to eat beans, not to eat peas. You know, these things we avoid. But he allowed us, you know, to eat other kinds of foodstuffs. That's, you know, because we were out preaching every day and then to keep our strength up, that was required. But he said for those people who were not out preaching on Ekadasi, they should chant more rounds and they should fast. But the point that Mataji is making there is that especially on Ekadasi, it's said that sin personified resides within grains. So if you eat grains on Ekadasi, that's especially detrimental for spiritual advancement. I heard an interesting story one time, many years ago in England. This man was not a devotee, but there was an Indian man that lived next door to him, and that man would always observe Ekadasi. And he had a heart attack, and he fell into a coma. And then somewhere or another he came out of the coma. Everybody thought that he was going to die, the Indian man. And then afterwards, you know, he fully recovered. And he told his neighbor, who was not a devotee, he said that whilst he was in the coma, he was told, oh, this man has strictly observed Ekadasi, so he may live for another 13 years. So his death was postponed because he was observing Ekadasi, and then, you know, he came out of his coma. And sure enough, 13 years later, he died. So he got an extra 13 years. And that man was not necessarily a devotee, But he knew about the benefits of a codicil, and he was following that. So, you know, it has a direct effect. Yeah.
Actually, even on the codicil, at least in India, they use also certain vegetables. They also don't use certain vegetables. There's certain vegetables that are recommended in Ayurveda to us that can be eaten and others cannot be eaten.
So yeah. There's lots of technicalities when you get into a codicil. You know, there's different standards. But Prabhupada made the point that if you're preaching, then a lot of that, you know, can be avoided. Yeah, you'll see in the Gaudiya mat also there's certain vegetables that they won't eat that Prabhupada himself was taking every day. Tomatoes, I think carrots in some of the Gaudiya mats. There's different standards. But the basic minimum is no grains, no beans and no peas. And one other reason why Prabhupada said we avoid those is because on a codicil, you should not be out working in the fields. You should be doing your spiritual activities. So grains are avoided because otherwise, you know, you're out there growing your crops and everything and harvesting and what have you. So at least on a codicil, you should have a break from that activity. So there's different aspects of it. But your question about prasadam, is that answered now or not?
Actually, my question was, like, say, a spiritually advanced person will eat something cooked by not so spiritually advanced. What will happen? Will he, like, destroy all his spiritual gains? Or, like,
all right,
what actually happens?
If a spiritually advanced person eats food that's cooked by a person who's not so spiritually advanced, what will happen? It depends on the consciousness of the person who's cooking and the consciousness of the person who's eating. Yeah, it's not like black and white. It's not like a mathematical calculation. The point is, just like Srila Prabhupada, he accepted whatever we offered him. So we weren't necessarily always in perfect consciousness. But we were doing it sincerely to try to please Srila Prabhupada, and he would accept that. Prabhupada himself would automatically offer everything to Krishna. I remember when I first joined the Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan. I had gone there just a couple of months. I was there for the opening, and then I joined the temple there in August of 1975. I was already a devotee, I'm saying, but I moved there. And I was the temple commander. So one of the cooks was Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, Anand Brahmachari. Very, very nice man. Very simple, you know, been a brahmachari his entire life. And he had been the personal cook for some time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So he was cooking in the kitchen. And somebody noticed that after he cooked, he would take a sample of everything and then go off and eat. And they couldn't figure it out because they didn't see him, you know, demonstrably offering, you know, what he had cooked to, you know, the deities or anything. So they brought that up to Srila Prabhupada, and then Prabhupada said, whatever he cooks is automatically offered to his Guru Maharaj. Because that was his general state of consciousness. Yeah. Now, people that are not in a permanent state of Krishna consciousness, we have rules and regulations which, if followed, will have the same effect as, you know, the actions that a person who is fully Krishna conscious performs. So there are two stages. There's Sadhana Bhakti and there's Raganuga Bhakti. When you're on the stage of Raganuga Bhakti, it means that you're so spontaneously attracted to Krishna that everything that you do is automatically for the pleasure of the Lord and not for yourself. That's an advanced stage. In our stage, we're, you know, neophytes. So, not necessarily, we're not necessarily in the best state of consciousness every day, every minute. So there are rules and regulations which, if you follow sadhana bhakti, it will still purify everything and spiritualize it. Yeah? So just like we offer our foodstuffs to the deities, we have to do that very strictly 6 times a day for Radha Krishna. And, you know, there's different kinds of foodstuffs that should be offered at different times of the day. So if you follow the rules and regulations, even if you're not in such good consciousness, if you follow the procedure, then Krishna accepts it. Your spiritual master will accept it. But if you're, you know, violating the principles, let's say somebody's a pujari, but they're deliberately breaking the principles. Yeah, and then when they're cooking, you know, they're doing so many nonsense things. Krishna doesn't necessarily accept that. When they come and make the offering, the deities do not necessarily accept what that person is offering if they're purposefully violating the principles. And then if you others eat that, you know, offering, so-called offering, then they're going to get some adverse reaction from that because it's not actually prasadam. So it's not mechanical. There are procedures, but the procedures themselves also have to be executed with the proper state of consciousness. Yeah? And if they don't, then if you take prasadam from somebody who's in, you know, just in a lot of maya or doing sinful activity, you will suffer as a result of that. Now, if a person's spiritually advanced, they can absorb, you know, that sinful reaction and it won't affect them. But if they're not so spiritually advanced, they will become affected and then they may also have problems. Yeah. Alright, so we'll finish there. It's after 9 o'clock. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.